I was polled by Voters Not Politicians a year ago, which kind of surprised me, but okay.
John Lindstrom covered politics in Lansing for a really long time. He used to be the publisher of Gongwer News Service before he retired. He's one of those people who's really hard to take by surprise. He thought he'd seen it all until this call came from the group Voters Not Politicians that worked to reform redistricting in Michigan.
One of the questions I asked, and this was one of the strangest questions I've ever been asked in a poll, was, if Voters Not Politicians was an animal, what kind of animal would it be? And I thought about it for a moment, and I said, a platypus. And they said, what? Why a platypus? I mean, I figured they're going to say a French bulldog or something. and I said, well, you had no money, really, until close to the end on the campaign. You did it all on a citizen organization, which almost never happens these days. You didn't pay for petition signatures, which almost doesn't happen these days. You were able to put together a proposal that people agreed with, and you won a majority of the voters in this state. And not only a majority of all the voters, you won probably a majority of both parties. And that's just not supposed to happen. Well, here's a platypus. He's crawling on the ground. He's got duck feet, a duck bill. He lays eggs, and he has square poop. That animal isn't supposed to exist. And theoretically, neither are you.
So if that level of weird can happen, can this new commission redrawing the district lines deliver? This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Voters said yes back in 2018 to taking gerrymandering out of Michigan's political representation. The thing is, stripping the politics out of election maps turns out to be easier said than done. Michigan was known for years as one of the most gerrymandered states in the U.S. Today, we'll hear how we got the political representation that we have currently and what's going on to change it. So, John, if we imagine what redistricting used to look like, I'm going to paint a picture of state lawmakers sitting as they would in the auspicious surroundings of the Capitol, maps of the state flanking the dais, and a stream of high-powered politicos testifying, schmoozing the elected reps for the district lines that they think should be drawn. Am I getting warm here? Is this close to how it went?
Oh, the dreams of youth. no, the thing about redistricting, not just in Michigan, but nationwide, for a long time was tied as much to land as it was to the number of people that lived in an area. All four of Michigan's constitutions, going back to 1835, make a specific reference to how you apportion on the basis of county boundaries or local boundaries. So the last constitution that was developed in this state, the 1963 constitution, it went swimmingly. That was probably the least contentious constitutional convention of any constitutional convention in the history of this country. Even things like the ban on the death penalty got tossed up, and almost everyone voted for it, Democrats and Republicans, until they came to the issue of redistricting. And then it all fell apart. And that was because the Democrats wanted a one-man, one-vote situation, and the Republicans wanted a situation that would still involve a formula that looked at, for one thing, land, territory, boundaries, and population.
And, well, why can you unpack why land would have been important to the Republicans making this argument at the time?
All I can think of is that the idea was that you wanted to make sure that people were represented from their areas, which makes sense in large measure. And actually, to a degree, we still have a provision for considering boundaries, even in the 2018 proposal that Voters Not Politicians passed. There is a requirement that they still look at as much as possible compactness and contiguous lines, which was part of the Bernie Apel standards that were enacted in the 1982 Supreme Court case in Michigan, which threw out the 1963 constitutional provisions. In 1963, what they did is they created a commission. They consisted of two Republicans and two Democrats, and they were supposed to come up with the lines. And you know, you had all kinds of wacky proposals. There was one chap I remember who came in quite serious with a proposal that every single representative and every single senator would represent a portion of the entire state. And he was going to do that by a demarcation line that started right at Woodward and Jefferson in Detroit, and then extended out big pie wedges all the way across the state, if you can imagine. Thank God they didn't enact that. But the Constitution, however, did not make a provision for one man, one vote. And that was a decision made by the U.S. Supreme Court, in which they said you have to look at actual populations. Because otherwise, if you do it just on the basis of the territories, then you've debased the votes of various people. I mean, you could have an area that, say, has lost a lot of population and still would, say, be entitled to get two or three representatives, whereas an area that's gained a lot of population is only entitled to get one. And so that's inherently unfair. In effect, what we've been doing is going to a system that theoretically is more fair. Now, in 1982, the Supreme Court here in Michigan said the people can come up with a redistricting idea if they want to. Well, they didn't bother to get around to that for 36 years. And so that left it up to the legislature. And because for the last three redistricting cycles, it has been largely a Republican-controlled state government. And so they were the ones crafting the lines. After the 2000 and 2010 censuses, it was all Republican-controlled, and it was pretty brutal. I mean, they made no secret of the fact of what they were going to do.
John, let's flash forward. Michigan's voters passed a ballot measure in 2018 that has mandated there will be this independent commission of citizens, not partisan people who do have a party affiliation, but not people who are directly connected or have served for their party. And they've asked that this be redone, as is happening right now, with the idea that communities of interest must be considered. In the language of representation, that's the work that's happening right now. In the language of representation, what are communities of interest?
Well, you think first of all protecting minority populations, but you can get into all kinds of different things. Are you talking about a specifically rural area, heavily agricultural? Are you talking about a specifically industrial area where you've got a lot of union workers? Are you talking about an area, for example, say, Oak Park, where you have a very heavy Jewish population, as well as a very heavy Muslim population, or Dearborn, where you have a very heavy Muslim population? I mean, to a certain degree, communities of interest, there's no real hard and fast definition of it at this point. And that will, in effect, come as these things are considered.
John, there was an article in the Free Press this week speculating that while the commission is an independent citizen commission, it might still be susceptible to lobbying. Having seen what you've seen, do you think that there is any way to take an aspect of lobbying in one form or another out of the redistricting process?
Well, it's interesting that piece said that, because I've been involved in some discussions with friends of mine, some of whom were very inactive with voters, not politicians, who have raised that as a major concern. And they are hopeful that commission members are being told, watch yourself. You go out all across the state and do these public hearings. Now, under COVID, it may be a little more difficult to do this. But if you're all sitting around at dinner, make sure nobody's actually picking up your dinner for you that you don't know about, or make sure nobody's buying drinks for you or something like that. That's the concern that they have, is that you could see some subtle lobbying to try to influence how the maps will be drawn. And of course that comes on top of the problem of not getting the full data probably in time for when the maps have to be created.
And, right. And just then you run into, for those who aren't up on this, the U.S. Census has announced that it's going to be delivering the data necessary for this work very late, like 30 days before the commission's supposed to be completely done.
Right. And there is really no provision in the constitutional amendment to come up with another map if they get fresh data. There is, obviously the Supreme Court could step in if need be, but there are a number of problematic situations here.
John Lindstrom is a longtime journalist covering state capital politics, now retired. He was for many years the publisher of Gong War News Service. John, thank you so much for talking with us about this.
You're more than welcome.
When we come back, we'll talk more about how that delay in the 2020 U.S. Census data is forcing Michigan's Redistricting Commission to adjust its timetable for redrawing district maps. We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
As we've heard, Michigan's Redistricting Commission needs more time to redraw the state's political maps. The problem is a late delivery from the U.S. Census of important data. Sue Hammersmith is the executive director of the Michigan Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission. Sue, the commission has decided to hire a firm based in Virginia to help draw the district maps. Can you tell us a little bit about the relationship between the firm and the commission? I mean, what are the things that the commission cannot do itself that the contractor might be able to accomplish?
So there aren't too many citizens who have the capabilities and the software to actually draw maps for the districts that will be required through the process. So the commission felt it was best to seek an independent contractor to provide the mapping services, and they have chosen Election Data Services out of Virginia for this service.
There was some concern among commission members about this specific firm, that the firm has a reputation for drawing districts that look like a Picasso painting. Has that concern been resolved?
This is the group that has been hired, and it is the job of the commission then to make sure that the lines are drawn fairly and in a nonpartisan manner. So they did bring a team of both Republicans, Democrats, and also an independents to the table, and they have said that all three will be working on maps. And again, the commission's job is to make sure the maps are drawn in a fair and a transparent manner. So they will be upholding that end of the Constitution to make sure this really happens.
There have been some major concerns expressed about the timing of the U.S. Census results, which are going to be coming in late this summer, and the commission's constitutional obligation to draw new districts by a deadline not long after that in September. How big of a concern is the discrepancy in those dates right now?
April, it's a big enough concern that the commission voted on Friday to seek relief from this deadline from the Supreme Court. And here's the reason. The census data is supposed to come in on September 30th. The commission is supposed to have final maps drawn by November 1st. However, there's a 45-day comment period, which goes back to September 17th, which would in essence require the maps to be drawn by September 17th. And that is an impossibility without having the census data, which has now been delayed twice, first from April 1st to July 30th, and then from July to the September 30th date. So they've made it difficult process for the commission. But in the meantime, we have a lot of work to do. So we're going to be holding first our public hearings before a first line is drawn. So that's really important that we want people to engage in public hearings throughout the state and for people to engage in any kind of public comment. They can go to our website. They can go to, they can come to a commission meeting and provide public comment. So that's the most important thing right now. So we're going to focus on what's most important and all the steps that we need to take and that we can take prior to getting the census data.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the process as it stands. Walk us through what's going to be happening with the public meetings.
The public meetings are being scheduled in May and June. They will be scheduled throughout the state. The commission has not yet determined a final list of locations. The Constitution, however, requires at least 10 public meetings before any maps are drawn. So we will meet that minimum criteria and do our best to go above and beyond to seek input in as many communities and from as many people as possible. This is really a citizens-driven process, and we want to make sure that people give their input, especially around the area of communities of interest. So if there's a cultural or historical or economic group that doesn't want to be divided up into different districts, they need to come forward and tell us, this is really important to us, and we want to make sure when the maps are drawn that our community of interest is included in those maps as a whole unit that can vote together on what we feel is important to us.
And then what will the plan of action be once the census data finally is released?
Interestingly enough, it's just like we can't get to work the next day. There are details that need to be worked into the plan by the state of Michigan. So, for example, they will overlay the census data on voting data. So there's lots of things that need to happen before we can actually get to the mapping process. So there will be some delay. Everybody is doing their best to make sure that everything happens as quickly as humanly possible in the process.
I'm starting to see why you wanted to make that request for a delay. Once the lines are drawn, Sue, as we look down to the later stages of the process, do you anticipate there will be a time when the public, or I guess even elected officials, can lobby their complaints or concerns about the maps as they're proposed?
According to the Constitution, once the lines are drawn, there's supposed to be a 45-day public comment period and also 5 public hearings at a minimum that the commission will host. So there is more input after the maps are drawn, and then the commission would need to meet again in an open and transparent meeting, open to the public, that they can have further discussion based on more input.
I know that there's not a lot of latitude in how this process was initially described and set into motion. You know, it wasn't the commission's choice to work on the timeline that it has. How is everybody involved in this feeling about the likelihood of maps being drawn in such a way that will make it that will make them useful for people who are running elections in the years to come?
We actually had the director of the Bureau of Elections meet with the commission on March 5th to have this discussion because people need to file for primaries by April 19th and, you know, an upcoming election. So there's a very tight timeline there, and we're going to work with the Michigan Department of State and the Bureau of Elections so that we can mutually meet our deadlines as best possible. So it's quite a balancing act. Typically, it takes 6 months from census data for the Bureau of Elections to get ready. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in compressed time frames, but we feel that by working together, we can achieve more than going our separate ways. So we are working with Bureau of Elections and the Department of State to make sure that future elections can be held with the new districts drawn and in a fair and most transparent process.
This is quite an unusual situation in what was already something of a new experiment for Michigan, and a lot of pressure, frankly. How's everybody on the commission getting along?
I would say the commissioners have done quite a good job of making sure that once decisions are made, they move on, of being respectful to each other, of trying to make sure that the best job is done for the people of Michigan. So I think everybody's committed to the goal, which is most important, and that is fair lines are drawn for future elections. So I think that commitment to the goal will be the if you will, the saving grace of this commission of 13 randomly selected people who were engaged together in this process.
Many of our communities in Michigan are divided by different understandings of what's going on in America right now. And there are still some people holding to misinformation, disinformation, or outright lies about the election being stolen. Has that been much of an issue among the members?
I don't believe that's been any issue among the members. Again, they understand that their goal is to create nonpartisan maps. And I see that expressed by everybody, no matter which party they're from or whether they're an independent. They are committed to the task ahead of them, and they are, I don't see them veering from committing to the task of drawing nonpartisan fair maps for Michigan.
Sue Hammersmith is the executive director of the Michigan Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission. Sue, it's a pleasure to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, April.
And that's Stateside for today. I'm April Baer. You can stream more of the full Stateside show at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Today's episode was produced by Mercedes Mejia. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.